Today's Taisho will be on Case 46 in the Blue Rock Collection, Kyosei's Voice of the Raindrops. Engo's Introduction. In a single action, he transcends both the ordinary and the holy. With a single word, he cuts away all complications and encumbrances. He walks the ridge of an iceberg. He treads the edge of a sword. Seated amid the totality of form and sound, he rises above them, leaving aside the freedom of such subtle activity. Tell me, what about finishing it in a moment? See the following. Main subject. Kyosei asked a monk, "What is the noise outside?" The monk said, "That is the voice of the raindrops." Kyosei said, "Men's thinking is topsy-turvy. Deluded by their own selves, they pursue things." The monk asked, "What about yourself?" Kyosei said, "I was near it, but I'm not deluded." The monk asked, "What do you mean by near it, but not deluded?" Kyosei said, "To say it in the sphere of realization may be easy, but to say it in the sphere of transcendence is difficult." Secho's verse. The empty hall resounds with the voice of the raindrops. Even a master fails to answer. If you say you have turned the current, you have no true understanding. Understanding? No understanding? Misty with rain, the southern and northern mountains. I want to thank everybody for coming here this morning to practice this beautiful path of Zen. A couple of you are here for the first time, a first half-day sit, and I want to compliment you on a job well done. It's a challenge to sit this much with so little break time, and yet all of the people who are new here today did very well. I really want to compliment you. There's something special about these Saturday sits. You know, if we sit, when we sit together on Monday or Thursday or Friday night, we sit for one period, and that is 2 half-hour periods, and then we have our tea and we go home. But on a Saturday, we have the chance to practice a number of sits in a sequence. And I think you will agree with me that when you do it this way, you can go much more deeply into your samadhi. There's a chance for much deeper concentration. So you do two periods and or three periods, and then we have a little break, and then you know two more, and then the taisho, and that's quite a bit of sitting in one stretch. And all this time, your concentration is getting deeper, 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 deeper. If you can get through a half day of meditation, you can do sesshin. And I just want to say that because I hope you think about sesshin as your next step. Sesshin is really the most beautiful of all the practices in Zen. So please do consider it. But the Saturday sits are a wonderful opportunity to build up your concentration, build up your mental focus. And it's probably a little strenuous at first. We used to have something like this in Seattle, where I trained at the Seattle Zen Center. And the first couple times I did it, I would go home and I would be so wiped out, I would just have lunch and I would go to sleep. I mean, I was always sort of sleepy at the end of the whole thing, and I would just go home and eat something and sack out for a few hours. But after a while, that stopped happening. And if you do feel tired after the Saturday sit, by all means, get some rest and have a good lunch. Yeah. But eventually, that won't happen to you. You'll leave here and you'll be very energized. The truth is that at first, you know, a Saturday sit may seem quite formidable. It's we're starting at 7 and we don't end until noon, and probably the breaks amount to less than half an hour. So it's quite a bit of time on the cushion. And it can seem at times, especially during that second period of meditation, toward the end, I can see a few people squirming around, you know. And I know people are thinking, you know, when is that bell going to ring? But, toward the end, people have the chance to really enter into deep concentration. And eventually, when you come in here and sit on a Saturday morning, it'll be over like that. I myself was just walking back from the bathroom and thinking, that's it? You know, it's just like that, gone, and very precious. So congratulations. I myself had quite a good sit today. Yesterday morning, I got up and I went for a long walk run because I hadn't been getting much exercise. So I probably went for about 5 or 6 miles, I guess. And at the end of it, my knee was pretty stiff because I have arthritis in my knee, which is not from sitting, it's from jogging. Because now I've been sitting for 30-some years, I've been jogging for probably almost 38 years or something like that, on cement. So I have osteoarthritis in my knee, and when I run and walk, if I do a lot of running, it definitely gets a little fluid in there and gets a little stiff. So this morning, on the second sit, I began to really feel my knee. And maybe 10 minutes into the second period of sitting, I was definitely feeling the pressure from the pain. And, I just thought, uh-oh. I'm the teacher. I'm not supposed to squirm around on my cushion. So just start using the hara. Start squeezing the dantian, the deep squeezing, and focusing on mu with all my might. You know, it's just like focus on mu every time you. Oh, everything disappears. Everything in the universe really disappears. And then that beautiful energy arises. You know, that beautiful, it's just like that million volts of electricity flowing through my veins, flowing through your veins. It's just marvelous, marvelous. So, what a great way to start the day. Now, when this happens, is it transcendence or not? Is it I had a lot of pain, enter deep mushin, use that hara. Is that transcendence or not? Because this koan is really about transcendence. In a single action, he transcends both the ordinary and the holy. See, transcendence is so important. People think of Buddhism as a religion. I personally think Buddhism is not a religion. It's a way of life based upon the cultivation of awareness. I'm not really convinced that makes it a religion, but people do lump it in with other religions, and they do teach it in departments of religion and so on. And religions are really interested in this idea of transcendence. Transcendence is so important. So, we often think that Zen is about transcendence, you know. We use other words too, like detachment, right? Zen is about detachment, not being attached to things. So, in the main subject, Kyosei is a Zen teacher, a Zen master, sensei. And he is sitting in the Zen hall, or they're doing Dokusan, I don't know. And Kyosei says to a monk, "What's that noise outside?" And the monk said, "That is the voice of the raindrops." Now, Kyosei makes an ambiguous response. He says, "You know, human thinking is upside down. Humans see everything upside down, topsy-turvy. Deluded by their own selves, they pursue things. They become attached to form." So this sounds like a criticism of the monk, right? Kyosei says, "What's that noise outside?" This could be like an innocent question, but it could be like a Zen question, right? He's testing the monk's state of mind. "What's that noise outside?" The monk says, It's the voice of the raindrops. And Kyosei says, humans are very confused. They're very attached to form, to sounds, to sights, so on. So he's kind of saying to the monk, "Oh, I'm so sorry you're paying attention to the raindrops. You're still attached to the world of form." See, that's what he seems to be saying. The monk says, "Well, what about you?" Kyosei says, again, and he's a very cagey Zen master. Kyosei said, "I was near it, but am not deluded." So he didn't say, "I paid no attention." And he didn't say, "I didn't notice it." He said, "I was near it, but I wasn't deluded." And the monk's puzzled by that. He says, "Well, what does that mean?" The monk said, "Well, what do you mean, near it, but not deluded?" And Kyosei said, "To say it in the sphere of realization may be easy, but to say it in the sphere of transcendence is difficult." So the answer doesn't clear, he's a very good Zen teacher, his answer doesn't clear anything up, right? In fact, it just makes it even more confusing. And that's a very good Zen teacher. So it's all a big mess now. And the monk's thinking, "Oh, I failed. Have I failed to transcend? You know, should I be transcending?" And so on. So that's the koan. I guess all of us start practicing Zen because we're unhappy with our lives in some way. I think that's fair to say. You know, something about life is not what we want. It could be that we're just have a kind of feeling of emptiness. You know, something's missing. It could be that something is bothering us in a big way. You know, something's really troubling us. It could be that life has done us some kind of injury, you know, has done us some kind of hurt or harm. That's very typical. People come to the cushion for many reasons, but I think in most cases they've had some kind of an injury or they've seen some kind of a shadow crossing their path in life. And after all, Zen is rather strenuous, right? So people have to have had some kind of an experience, I think, that brings them to the cushion. And usually they find the sitting helps them. Sitting helps. The experience of suffering in life is something I think we're all familiar with. We all have things that hurt us. you know, I myself think I came to Zen because I was suffering. I mean, maybe I'm just generalizing from my own experience. But, you know, when I was about 23, 24 years old, I was a very unhappy person. I was in sort of like psychological pain a lot of the time. Seemed to me that the world was really a very screwed up place. And I have to confess that I came from a very unhappy family background, you know. And so I was having a hard time just living in the world and dealing with its demands on me. I had gotten out of college, which I didn't really enjoy very much. And I had done a series of jobs, which I didn't really enjoy very much. You know, I was one of these students who thought, boy, when I get out of college, my life is going to start.